Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM Sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Get everything you need for your next project today at Menards and save big money. LP SmartSide products are the number one brand of engineered wood siding. SmartSide trim and siding offers long-lasting performance and delivers the warmth and beauty of traditional wood. Save big money today at Menards and LP SmartSide products. Plus, visit Menards.com to view the weekly flyer and check out all of our great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Okay, motherfucker!
What are you looking at, sir?
I'm looking at you, miss.
Run that, baby.
I'm not the Zodiac. And if I was, I certainly wouldn't tell you.
Fight fire with fire. A Talking Heads lyric, yes, but also the tagline for the dragon apocalypse blockbuster, Reign of Fire. My name is Maria Lewis. I'm a best-selling author, filmmaker, pop culture etymologist, and I'd like for you to don your leather, load the crossbow, and prep that 17-second lifespan on Freefall as we revisit one of the most fascinating modern blockbusters some 21 years after its debut. Reign of Fire crashed and ironically burned at the box office in the summer of 2002. Audiences decided it didn't deliver on all it promised on the poster, which depicted a dystopian London besieged by dragons as they set fire to the Big Ben. It debuted in third place on its opening weekend behind Men in Black 2 and Road to Perdition. By the end of its theatrical run, it barely scraped back its $60 million budget internationally with a global haul of $82 million. which is an interesting figure when you consider its stars. Matthew McConaughey, Christian Bale, and Gerard Butler, all who were on their way to A-list status. For director Rob Bowman, that cast was lightning in a bottle.
I take no credit for anybody's success, but considering that I don't think you can afford to put those three guys in the same movie right now.
It has taken two decades and a surprise legacy thanks to home entertainment and cable reruns, but now viewers are right there with them.
A creature has been awakened that has lain dormant for millions of years.
One regards Reign of Fire with awe, wrote Roger Ebert back when the film was first released. Quote, incredulity is our companion, and it's twofold. We cannot believe what happens in the movie, and we cannot believe that this movie was made, he said. It was a one-star review, to be fair, and his pen was usually a lot sharper when it came to one-star reviews from the famous film critic. He seemed to begrudgingly like the movie, even though, quote, it makes no sense on its own terms, let alone ours, end quote. He wasn't the only critic to feel this way, with Variety's Joe Layden noting that it had, quote, an uncommonly satisfying mix of medieval fantasy, high-tech military action, and Mad Max-style misadventure, end quote. While the New York Times added that it was loads of fun. It has a jamming B-picture buzz, said critic Elvis Mitchell. Quote, the kind of swift filmmaking and high spirits that have been missing from movies for a while, end quote. Those reviews and the outlets they came from were not insignificant. They recognized something late Hollywood producer Richard Dick Zunick also saw. Having one Best Picture for Driving Miss Daisy, an Academy Award win that hasn't aged super well in hindsight, Zunick was best known for producing classics like The Sound of Music, The Verdict, and Jaws. He had earned the opportunity to leverage his capital when he saw fit, which he did in the most unexpected ways for Reign of Fire.
I remember the original script was a spec written by these guys who'd never, like, I don't think they'd ever written anything before.
Yeah.
I think they were, like, these Wisconsin guys. And part of the thing that I remember reading about it when it sold and sort of thinking, you know, fuck, why didn't I think of this? This is great, you know? What I think was great, and it sort of had to be written by people who weren't in the film industry at that point, is because if you told anybody the pitch, you know, it's like, okay, it's a dragon apocalypse, and you'd be like, get the fuck out of my
office.
That's one of Reign of Fire's screenwriters, Matthew Greenberg. Then a baby writer, he was considered the guy you got to punch up a script and make it shootable, which is exactly what he was hired to do in this instance. Yet unlike his last two projects with Dimension, Mimic, and Halloween H2O, both iconic in their own right, he had fought to get on Reign of Fire. Not just as a fan of the early draft, but as someone who had a background in it academically after being a medieval studies major in college. He was brought onto the project to help hone the vision of those two Wisconsin guys, Greg Chabot and Kevin Peterkar, who had never had anything made before Reign of Fire and have never had anything made since, only adding to their mystique. Then in his 60s, Dick Zunick didn't care about what their previous credits were or weren't. He cared about what was on the page, and what he saw was a merging of medieval and military. More importantly, he felt it was something he had never seen before.
Big question of, like, because it wasn't only dragons, it was dragons in modern day in this sort of, you know, fucked up setting. And you know, in Hollywood, it's very interesting because you're dealing with vast amounts of money and everybody's scared. And, you know, no, it's just, you know, terror and anxiety and envy are, like, you know, the three major emotions that you pass through, you know, usually within, you know, a minute of each other every minute of every day. But, you know, we knew that everybody knew we were taking a chance. But, you know, I'll tell you something, you know, the guy who was the producer on it, or one of the producers, and who was really... he was kind of one of my mentors, was Dick Zunick, right? Who unfortunately passed away a number of years ago. And Dick, it was really interesting, you know, because Dick Zunick know, he was the son of Daryl Zanuck. You know, he was Hollywood royalty. He was one of those guys, you know, and he had done Jaws, you know,
yeah.
And he had done like lots of great movies.
Yeah.
And
the Rain of Fire of the Sea, as Jaws is known.
Yeah, exactly. Well, no, that was exactly it. And where Dick was brilliant was that he understood that he stood at the balance between risk and, you know, and safety. And he always knew that, you know, you can always play it safe and, you know, you might get lucky and stuff like that. But when he saw something that really spoke to him, and this is the thing that was really great, it's like right from the beginning, right from our first pitch, he got it. You know, he understood, you know, where at least I was coming from. And so that, and his son Dean as well, you know, who was, you know, also a producer on it, who was extremely, you know, smart and very, very helpful. They were able to guide it sort of through the initial stages of development.
The biggest issue, however, was money. At the time, Rob Bauman was coming off the back of a big hit with the X-Files movie after directing and producing dozens of episodes of the show. It too was high concept genre fare, but on a $66 million budget, Bauman had been able to craft something that was faithful to the feverish fandom and a $189.2 million hit at the box office. It put him in the sights of many a Hollywood exec, including Zanuck. Here's Rob.
The first script I read, I would bet, would have cost $300 million.
Yeah.
And that was not going to happen. So how do I distill it down? And by the way, we have a short prep because of that doggone actor strike coming up. So we were writing it. Matter of fact, the last day of filming was all the stuff with Matthew in the command vehicle quarterbacking the Archangel sequence.
Mm.
And the movie had evolved narratively throughout production. We were still writing it. And on the last day of filming, I remember sitting with Matthew, and he was a great sport about it, that I had to tell him, you know, these things that had happened to the story, most of which he was aware of and some that he wasn't, and that Matthew and I wrote that morning on set most of the dialogue or corrected all of the scenes right before we shot them.
The initial projected budget of the movie was in part what had seen Rain of Fire bounce around from Spyglass to Fox to Touchstone and Disney, but it was Bauman's distilled version that eventually got the green light. And, says Greenberg, his ability to ground the crazy concept in reality.
There was a bit of artwork that the director, Rob Bauman, showed me early on that blew me away. It was a picture of the main dragon. And it wasn't just like, hey, this is a cool dragon. Is that I think Rob's model for this was like literally in his head, it was a dragon, but also he had like a massive like B-52 bomber that had just gone through combat. So it was like fucked up in different places and
yeah.
It survived. You know, you could see all the, and I thought, well, that's freaking genius.
The bare bones of the plot has a young boy witness the death of his mother after the London tunneling project she's working on digs too deep, unearthing a long, slumbering species of bloodthirsty dragons. Fast forward 20 years, and that boy is now a man, Quinn, played by Christian Bale, who catches us up on everything that has happened since, which is, you know, the end of the world, basically. It was dragons who wiped out the dinosaurs, their ash causing the Ice Age, and now the eventual downfall of man, as city after city falls to swarms of millions. He's holed up in what they believe is one of the last strongholds of humanity inside an English castle where he and his best mate, Creedy, played by Gerard Butler, try to keep the next generation alive and hopeful. The pair perform stage versions of Star Wars and The Lion King to keep the kids entertained in what is one of the more genuinely sweet moments in the story. Their uneasy peace is disturbed with the arrival of Americans, naturally, who come in tanks and helicopters and dirt-smeared singlets under the leadership of Matthew McConaughey's dragon slayer, Denton Van Zandt, a Hall of Famer for ridiculous, cinematic, badass names.
How did they go from 1 to 1 million in less than a year?
Now one will protect them.
We have to hang on, work together.
And one will lead them.
There's nothing magical about it. They're made of flesh and blood. You take out their heart, you bring down the beast.
It's a B-movie blockbuster, if such a thing can exist, with straight-faced performances from Oscar winners like Bale and McConaughey, paired with things like archangels, soldiers with a 17-second lifespan who yeet themselves out of helicopters and directly at the dragons terrorizing them. Here's Bowman again.
Absolutely. Well, I will tell you the four things that I felt were the heart of the recipe, which was tanks and castles, soldiers and dragons. I hadn't seen that one before. And I know in the earlier drafts, there was a little more digital technology in the weaponry. There was, you know, I think there was laser sighting, and I know there was RP. She said, you know, the problem with anything that you can use at a distance is it doesn't require much courage from the character. And so I whatever version I can come up with that's more hand-to-hand, which is impossible, you know, no different than tangling with a shark or a, you know, a lion or anything. It's like, what do you expect the outcome to be? It's going to be dead, dead, dead.
Yeah.
But in the end, you know, although Quinn's philosophy was very practical, like, why would you mess with them? You're just going to die. And that, you know, if we're running out of people, why throw another body at it when you already know what the outcome's going to be?
Mm.
You know, step into the cage at the zoo with the lion. What do you think is going to happen?
Friendships were also formed over it, namely between the core trio of Bale, McConaughey, and Butler, who are all just a few years out from their seminal roles. Bale hadn't yet become Batman, and Butler was still to scream,
"This is Sparta!"
That's not to say they weren't known entities, but Reign of Fire came in between two of McConaughey's biggest rom-com hits, The Wedding Planner and How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, and a full decade before the reconnaissance began in earnest. Yet few people were more dedicated to the role, recalls Greenberg.
That dude committed. You know, the director told me stories about how he would get calls from Matthew. This is when, you know, we were still in pre-production. He would get calls from Matthew and Matthew would talk to him, not as Matthew McConaughey, but as Van Zandt.
Oh my God.
Bowman confirmed he definitely got a phone call from McConaughey in character as the Dragon Slayer, a few in fact, but it was perhaps less mythologized than people remember, with Bowman saying that McConaughey was a funny guy with a great sense of humor.
It started with Matthew basically told me that I wasn't allowed to make the movie without him.
Cool, awesome.
And it was tenacious and ferocious in his commitment to playing that role, which I really loved.
For his part, it was the primal nature of the character that drew McConaughey to Van Zandt. Here's a clip of him on the press circuit at the time promoting the film.
It seemed wild. It seemed something. It was fiction. It was extraordinary. It seemed like it was going to be a lot of fun. It seemed like it was going to be very physical. Be a man of action. Go be a badass. Take care of business. A man working from necessity, not luxury. A man who doesn't talk about things but does them. And it was fun.
It was also the Academy Award winner's idea to don Pacifica-inspired dragon tattoos, something that meant hours of extra time in the makeup chair each day, but was supposed to be somewhat of a tribute to the famous New Zealand rugby union team, the All Blacks. Butler's casting was the beginning of a true bromance between he and Bowman, with the director affectionately calling him Jerry. Bowman met with Butler just once before he offered him the part after falling in love with him during their first IRL chat at Disney. It was Bale, he says, who was the real journey and a hard sell for the studio who felt that he didn't bring as much box office pull. In fact, it was very nearly a showdown between two of the most iconic muscle men of the 80s, Arnie and Sly.
The producers person had asked me if I would consider, you know, a Stallone or Schwarzenegger.
Mm.
And I said, the problem with that is I know who's going to be alive at the end of the movie.
Mm.
And I know what's going to happen to the dragon. And I sort of submarine the dragon's menace and threat from the beginning, because I have that, you know, sort of impenetrable, perpetually victorious actor, character, if it's Arnold or Sly. And, you know, and those guys have such a huge screen presence. And I'm asking the audience to say, okay, there's fake dragons in this movie as the villain. I couldn't ask them to do anything else.
Bale was his pick for leading man, given he was a very strong, soulful person who didn't bring much baggage, says Bowman, and the genius of that choice shines in the smaller moments, those when he interacts with the children and leads them in reciting their daily prayer, if you will.
What do we do when we wake?
Keep your eyes on the sky.
What do we do?
What do we do when we sleep?
Keep one eye on the sky.
While a no-brainer now, at the time it wasn't just the studio that Bowman had to convince about Bale. It was Bale himself.
So I flew to Berlin, sort of like, I have to go to Berlin today. You know, I stepped over to Berlin, and I met him in the restaurant in the Four Seasons in Berlin. And what I remember, and this may not be pinpoint accurate, what I remember is he looked at me very pleasant when I met him, and he held the script up with one hand and said something to the effect of, what are we going to do? And I said, Christian, I'm reading the same script you're reading, and I'm going to fix it, and I know what it is. And he goes, okay, tell me what it is. So I told him what I wanted to do with it. And that, it, to me, was really a story about the strength of the human spirit. You know, in the meeting in Berlin, you know, just kind of made me promise. You know, and Christian, when he looks at you, and he means it, that's a hard look.
His cell worked, along with the promise to ground his dragons with as much ultra-realism as possible, a key element that fans still love and dissect to this day, that medieval meets military aesthetic. Here's Bale in an interview at the time.
There was just really great potential. It could have gone hideously wrong, like any movie could, but I always felt that this one could go even more hideously wrong than most when you're dealing with, you know, dragons. But after speaking with Rob, he just really nailed how it would work.
It was only after speaking with Rob that Bale thought he could do it. Once he was on board, so too was Butler and McConaughey, and after securing a tax break at Ireland, the production headed there for 90 days of principal photography. In Greenberg's words, there was nothing easy or normal about the shoot, and not just because the fact that the blackened wasteland he had described in his script was now going to be physically created in one of the luscious places on Earth.
You know, there were a number of, you know, production challenges. One of the things that was, you know, just happens, you know, it's like in my script, one of the things that I specified is that there's almost no plant life. Like mm-hmm. everything's just been burned mm-hmm. and it's just sort of this just blackened landscape, right? And so originally when we were looking at places to shoot, we were looking at places like Iceland you know, Spain or even Morocco and stuff. And then I get the call saying, okay, well, we're doing it in Ireland. Ireland. And I'm like, you know, and they're like, yeah, we're getting great tax breaks. And I thought, you know what? Fuck it. You know, it's they'll figure what, they'll CGI out the, you know, the greenness and everything like that. And then I'm at my I'm doing pre-production rewrites at my apartment in LA. I went briefly out to Ireland, or it was a while actually. I was out in Ireland during pre-production. I came back. I was still doing, you know, stuff. And I got a call saying, yeah, you know all those descriptions about the landscape being really black? And red? I'm like, yeah. It's like, yeah, you got to take those out. And I'm like, why? And they, well, it turns out
The events of the film are set in a dystopian future that takes place in the year of 2020. Of course, in our version of 2020, we became much more familiar with the idea of the end of the world than the filmmakers could ever have guessed at the time. But perhaps interestingly, Reign of Fire has never been more popular than it is right now. In part, that's thanks to Game of Thrones. The technology used to create the dragons in the series naturally drew a visual comparison point to Reign of Fire, which pioneered how to make giant flying reptiles look believable rather than, well, you know, Dragonheart. Bowman wanted his beasties as natural, geographic, authentic as possible.
Nobody made a truly authentic, realistic, almost ultra-realistic dragon. Or set it in an environment that seemed real. And then I probably made it, you know, 10 or 12 years too early because, you know, everybody started, as my artists say, everybody started ripping off our dragon. So, yeah, well, at least that means so relevant.
The film spent a year in post-production once the island shoot wrapped, and given what Greenberg considers a small budget, that $60 million figure, down from a projected $300 million, he calls it a technical achievement.
If we had made this movie today, we could have done everything because now we have the technology. Yeah. Back then, you know, we had stuff, but we didn't have nearly the access that we do now, you know. So, you know, it was, but, you know, it got made. It's at the end of the
yeah.
day. You know, it's not 120 pages, you know, there's a doorstop somewhere, so.
When Reign of Fire did debut in cinemas with a whimper before hitting home entertainment, it wasn't as poorly received as you might think a movie about Bale, Butler, and McConaughey fighting dragons might be. The box office had underwhelmed, sure, but critics seemed to appreciate the endeavor. The metamorphosis from flop to beloved cult film was almost instantaneous, with the filmmakers noticing a positive reaction on home entertainment that wasn't there during the theatrical run, according to Greenberg.
It was about a year after the movie came out, and I was at this barbecue store, right? Barbecues galore, right?
Yeah.
And I'm buying, like, you know, barbecue stuff, and the salesman asked me, you know, it's like, what do you do? I said, well, I'm a screenwriter. Oh, have you written anything? I know. It's like, well, I just had a movie come out, Reign of Fire. You wrote Reign of Fire? Oh my God, man! And he pulls me aside, and he brings me over to, like, his partner. It's like, dude, this guy wrote Reign of Fire! And his partner, like, looks at me, and I can tell right then, he fucking hated that movie. He hated me, right? You know, for writing it for Wasting It to Precious Hours. So, when you work on a project, in a weird way, you kind of want that, you know, you want, like, passionate response, mm-hmm. whether it's positive or negative,
yeah.
you know? I felt like, I mean, I'll be honest with you, you know, I was disappointed that when the movie came out, it didn't do better box office, it didn't do better, you know, in terms of critical review. Though I have to say, having done this, been in this business for, you know, a long time, you know, critics, you know, at the end of the day, who freaking cares?
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, I remember, and I'm not in any way equating myself to Stanley Kubrick, but you look at reviews, you know, seriously, you know, from big reviewers about The Shining and all this yeah. stuff, and they did not fucking get it.
For Bowman too, who went on to direct Elektra afterwards and find continued success in television with Castle and The Rookie, Reign of Fire is a subject that comes up often, more often than he ever expected.
I made the best movie I could make. I sort of, as they say in sports, I left it all in the field. And so it's not like, well, I read somebody didn't like it, or there was an issue with this or that. Well, look, we rushed the entertainment into business, but it's supposed to be an art also. I'm not saying it's the Mona Lisa.
There was a planned Reign of Fire sequel, according to internet forums at the time, but it was something that neither Bowman or Greenberg heard anything about. A so-so video game adaptation and rumored television series that never eventuated saw the end of a dragon multiverse, per se. Yet fans have kept it very much alive, not just through social media where seemingly obscure films suddenly have a burgeoning online fandom, but through subreddits that theorize possible prequels and custom scale replicas of Van Zandt that still sell for hundreds, sometimes thousands of dollars. That may seem surprising to some, but after over 30 years in the business, it's not a shock to Greenberg.
I've worked on a lot of stuff over the years, and really, you never know what's going to happen.
So true.
But of all the movies that I have worked on, that has been the one that, keeps people keep talking about. They say, oh yeah, and I think because, going back to what our discussion about, the medieval aspects of it and everything like that, I think that, what the director was able to do, what the actors were able to do, and everything like that, they did catch sort of a mythic sense that, can last through time, and I don't mean to sound grandiose, but some of these movies, I think the reasons that movies or really any work of art, last is because human beings in one sense are all tuning forks, and occasionally something comes along, pings, and it makes you ring, even years later.
I've been Maria Lewis, your writer, researcher, and presenter for this very special one-off episode, which is produced by Blake Howard of One Heat Minute Productions. If you like the kind of nonsense I spit, my latest novel for Marvel, Mockingbird Strike Out, is available everywhere good books are. In September, my debut slasher, The Graveyard Shift, drops and follows the host of a horror-themed radio show who gets reluctantly drawn into a series of brutal slayings. And in November, my 11th book, Assassin's Creed Mirage, Daughter of No One, will be hitting shelves and is currently available for pre-order right now. Might I also recommend, right here on this very network, Josie and the Podcats, a limited audio documentary all about the 2001 cult film Josie and the Pussycats.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.